Hello, everybody, and welcome in to an exciting new episode of Bloody Good Horror. My name is Eric, and I'll be your host for this evening, where we will be reviewing Saltburn. And if you're wondering why, it's because of our guest tonight. Please welcome Caitlin back to the show.
Hello. I'm so excited to be here.
Caitlin said,
a movie from 6 months ago? Why not?
Caitlin said, hey, I want to be on the show. And I said, all right, cool, come on. What do you want to do? And she was like, only if it's Saltburn. And I was like, I haven't seen it.
That's edited.
I only want to have the most awkward conversation with you all.
How you met me?
Not awkward to me.
No, I texted you guys immediately and I was like, have you seen Saltburn yet? Because I needed the takes. And you're like, maybe we can make this happen.
Well, yeah. I literally just watched it and you guys got to see my text in real time. So get excited.
Eric watched this in the bath. I just need that to be known on the record.
We can talk about it. There's a reason. But also, I'm not above a nice bath every now and then.
No, it's not that. It's just that this movie in particular is known for bath stuff.
Also joining us tonight from Indiana, please welcome Casey.
Hello.
And from Manhattan, New York City, please welcome John. John, I'm forever will assume that this is what your summer estate looks like now.
Well, you can come see it anytime, Eric. It's only like, 90 minutes from where you live.
Just a casual castle in upstate New York.
Yeah. So many of those. So many.
Did you also finger your cousin at your...
There's the hard-hitting Caitlin questions we missed. She's back.
Did you miss me so much?
Oh, man. Oh, God. So anyway, John, I took a bath while I was watching this movie. I hurt my shoulder really bad. I pinched a nerve in my arm. Mm-hmm. It's messed up.
Yeah.
I did some like old man working out, something dumb, like, and murdered myself. So I was like, you know what? Let's take a schwitz. Let's get in the tub and we'll get some hot water in there. I made it an hour and 15 minutes. And then I was like, I know that some people will be like, oh yeah, I just like keep topping off with hot water and I like stay in there. And I like almost did that, but I'm like, I can't do it.
I mean, an hour is a long time. It must've been getting very lukewarm at that point.
For some reason, my tub must be really well insulated. It was lukewarm, but it was pretty, I mean, it wasn't bad. It wasn't cold.
Had nothing to do with you having chili last night.
This is more information than I've ever wanted about what you do in the bathroom. So
it was nice. I enjoyed it. Anyway,
I think it's good.
I mean,
salt.
Cool.
That's the least awkward thing we're going to talk about tonight, John. So you better buckle in. Let's take a quick break and review Saltburn.
This is it, Jennifer. Your big break in TV. From the prime time.
Main feature.
Lots of British words on this evening's show.
Yeah.
Same as American, largely. Although, but then they say weird stuff like aluminium.
And they have their own version of eeny, meeny, miny, mo in this, where it's like just a little off.
Yeah.
Like the British version.
How dare they? All right, John, you don't seem to want to play ball with me tonight, so why don't you bring us the word of the day?
Eric, I'm not going to lie. Until literally 10 seconds ago, I completely forgot about looking up a word. So here we are.
Game time decision.
I punched in define Saltburn, and turns out there's a thing here. So we're just gonna go with that, and I'm going to read to you straight from the Google machine. A condition arising when fine salt coagulates proteins near the surface of a fish being prepared and prevents any further penetration of salt into the flesh.
Penetration.
There you go. Yeah.
It's pretty interesting. So like a curing process, sort of.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's like, it's different from curing because it's something that's happening during cooking as opposed to like over time. Gotcha. I that is how I understood it. But yeah, salt burn. It's not just the name of a fancy estate, manor.
Why don't you tell me about salt burn, John?
Yeah, salt burn, the film. This came, I wish I had the date in front of me. It came out
end of last year.
It was the end of the, I mean, I was going to say it was like October if I had to ballpark it. It did get a theatrical release. This is the second film written and directed. I think second, it's definitely the most recent after Promising Young Woman, by Emerald Fennell, who directed Promising Young Woman. And, here we are, with Saltburn. It stars Barry Keoghan, which I heard someone else pronounce this on a podcast today. I thought it was Barry Keegan. That was just like, I looked at it and I was like, ah, Keoghan. That is how they pronounced it. You know, let's call him Barry. It's just much cleaner. Yeah. Barry.
Barreled.
I mean, look, we'll get into it. Barreled. But I love Barry. Jacob Elordi. You've got what is her name? The mother.
There was a dude meant to play like British aristocracy, it was Jacob Elordi.
Elordi. I mean the name alone. Yeah, Rosamund.
But he's Australian.
Well, he's in he's on Euphoria. That's where he's sort of made his.
Okay, but he's Australian.
Sure, but that's where he sort of made his name. Sure. He's one of those people. Carey Mulligan makes what is probably my favorite appearance of the film.
Really?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I guess putting my cards on the table early, but yeah. So the story here is about Barry Keoghan plays Oliver, who is arriving at college. Do we know? Is it
Oxford?
It is Oxford. Okay. Officially, this is like actually Oxford.
Yeah. If you need like a line by line, I got you. Okay. I've watched this a whole bunch of times.
Caitlin, we're going to need it because I watched this once and it was a couple weeks ago. No, I mean, look, all right. I'm going to try to do it quickly because like there's so much goddamn plot in this movie. Like I could sit here and we could do the, you know, point by point.
I would have been done by now, John.
You have Oliver. He is. A sort of like working class ish, or like he's not upper crust in British society. He's arriving at Oxford and he's very smart.
He's poor.
He's bookish. He's not poor though. Like, I mean,
we
can come back to that.
Okay.
Fine. He's arriving at Oxford. He is like aspirational of sort of getting in with the cool crowd. Of which Jacob Elordi is sort of like the penultimate or the ultimate. There's like a group and it includes Elordi's cousin of the, you know, thing Caitlin mentioned. And
it's a different cousin.
Is
it's
it? Oh, sorry. Okay. In any event, there's like,
which cousin did he finger Caitlin? Do you want
to? It was an accident and it happened in the stairwell.
All right. There's like a crew. He like makes a nerdy friend that sort of falls apart as he insinuates himself into Jacob Elordi's life. Elordi invites him. His name's Felix. Felix invites him to his manor for the summer to like stay with his family. And this is like one of these old school fucking like servant
old money. My manor. Like,
yeah. Like, yeah. So it's like super old money, like the idle rich. This level of rich like doesn't even really exist in the United States, which I mean, it's something we can talk about. I mean, it does at some level, but like this is like generational wealth that goes back before the United States even existed at some level.
Yeah.
And so he goes and stays with them, and he insinuates himself into their lives, and that takes some dark twists and turns. Some dark, some sexy, you might say, and you know, it sort of ends in grim
darkly
fashion.
Sexy.
Darkly sexy, for sure. All of the sexiness is fairly dark, one might say. So, we can let Caitlin kind of walk us through it as we go. she can tell us her favorite sexy parts.
First of all, do you want to hear my Oliver impression? Because I've been working on it.
Sure.
He goes, "I'm not like you, Felix. I'm doing the same thing to me as it is to you."
You've practiced.
He's so
that.
Like, oh, he's, I love Oliver. I love this movie. I pulled up my notes because I covered this on Plug It Up and with Mary, who also really loved it. And I was looking at the 9 pages and 4,000 words I wrote for my notes for Saltburn. I love this movie. We'll get more into the spoilers, but I love a movie about obsession. And I don't know if this one got me good. I know there are a lot of comparisons to The Talented Mr. Ripley. So if you're unsure if this is like the vibe for you, if you're familiar with that, maybe you can base your opinion going forward.
I am not familiar with that. Is it a very similar story?
It's very not. Much.
One might My say this is derivative of that.
Gotcha.
I mean, at what point is everything?
Yeah. No. Fair.
But no, I love this. I think the comedy beats work great. Rosamund Pike is so good in this. I have a lot of tenderness for the dad character. I have a theory that Oliver is like a metaphorical vampire, not just the you know, vampire that he got his red wings set. Anyway, we'll get into it.
There's definite vampire, yeah, vibes, kind of in both directions, which is interesting.
But I just, yeah. I think this is beautiful. I love the costuming. This is great. And funnily enough, Charles, Carrie Mulligan, I feel like, from what I understand, Emerald Fennell sent her the script. And she was like, "This rules. I want to be a part of it." So she wrote Carrie Mulligan in, and it kind of feels like that to me. That's like my one criticism, but
she's the best. It's like the lead. Yeah. Did you see
Maestro?
I
would do anything for attention.
She's literally
this
like
is the
opposite,
problem, Caitlin. When you read about
Maestro.
Movies, when you read about movies before they come out, that's what happens. Remember
that?
Suddenly having flashbacks of our ex review. Oh man. Casey.
I like this movie a lot, despite all the weirdness in my advanced stage. I got pretty into it. I do think it is 100% a modern reskin of Talented Mr. Ripley, though. As this unfolded, I looked at Colleen at like the halfway point. I'm like, this is Talented Mr. Ripley, isn't it? There was a moment there that Caitlin's Red Wings comment that I thought, hey, maybe this will turn into some weird vampire movie.
Dude,
it is very
vampire. Red Wings to someone, wow. And they were like, "I don't know what that is." And I was like, "Am I a degenerate?"
No, you literally just like brought a memory back. Like, I forgot that was a thing. So you just said that.
Yeah. Pumpkinhead too.
I was going to say also the sequel to Pumpkinhead, kind of an amazing movie.
Yeah, but no, I like this a lot, and I've always thought it was Barry Keoghan as well, but I thought he was great in this, and I loved him with the villain turn. Jacob Elordi, I will be honest, I don't care one way or another. I saw him, the only other thing I've seen him in is when he hosted SNL a couple weeks after Saltburn came out, and I wasn't super impressed there.
He was kind of whatever on SNL, so he actually surprised me here, because I think he's actually really good here.
Yeah, I didn't think he was bad, but I just wasn't like blown away. I love Carrie Mulligan's part. Very much felt like it was written in, as Caitlin said. So it's interesting to hear that how that may have, you know, unfolded. So yeah, I was pretty positive on this despite all the weird trappings, and I kind of like the weirdness that it added. It added a good bit of humor, I think, that translated well.
Here's though what I'll say for that Carrie Mulligan character is it's wrapped into the story pretty well as like foreshadowing.
Yeah.
Of essentially showing what the family, how, because the family themselves are sort of like energy vampires. They just kind of bring people in, suck all the life out of them, and then escort them out the back when they're done. Right. And like, that's that kind of you need that kind of foreshadowing to understand the sort of like twist that happened later, I guess.
Yeah.
That's my defense of the Carrie Mulligan character.
I just thought she was a lot of fun.
Yeah. So, John, what'd you think?
I will say, I probably went into this with my expectations. So I have a good friend, a friend of the show, a listener here of the Old Bloody Good Horror podcast. She's texting me, this is like her favorite movie of the year. I got to watch it. Like she, you know, I basically got me pretty hyped up. I didn't love watching it. Like the problem, I don't, there's like, there's amazing sequences. Like some of the shit that happens in this movie, I am just so happy exists in a movie. Like I just love that it exists. I love that it's there. The performances are amazing. We talked about Carey Mulligan, but Rosamund Pike is amazing. Barry. I didn't know who Jacob Elordi was when I watched this movie. I love Jacob Elordi. I'm pro. Yeah, I'm very pro Jacob Elordi at this point. Like he's excellent. I'm like, what does this guy want to do? Let's figure that out. And like, let's run.
He was Elvis in Priscilla here recently,
which I haven't watched. It's now on Max, and Suzanne really wants to watch it. And that's very hard for me because she's terrible at watching movies. And I watch them all the time. And so it's like, I have to like schedule around. If I know she wants to watch it and I watch it without her, she'd be very upset. So I haven't seen Priscilla yet, but I really would like to. This is a movie where I walked away. I didn't love the entire experience, but I loved a lot of the parts of it. It is incredibly divisive, as I have come to learn. As I like everyone I talk to,
a little surprisingly.
Well, everyone I talk to has like very strong opinions about it, and like I guess I would fall into that camp as well. But I don't know. Like I'm happy that I've seen it. I am happy that I get to participate in the dialogue. I don't think it's a great. I don't think it's a great movie. I think it is a good movie. And as I said, I think there are great elements at play here. I don't know. There was did anyone read, maybe Caitlin, you saw, there was a New York Times piece that someone forwarded me that was like explaining the movie in a way that I like, because you know, there's like so many things that I think Emerald Fennell is trying to do, and I do think the movie is maybe like too smart by half at a certain level, and like this New York Times article is like explaining like, oh, you might have missed this stuff in Saltburn, and I sort of like, yeah, I did, because. It's frankly like some of the stuff they mentioned is so esoteric. It's like no one got this.
Interesting. We get to the end of the discussion, I want to circle back to that because I'm curious to.
I can send it to you. But
I loved it.
Okay.
No notes. Slurping bath water.
My man.
Weird sex stuff. Always in for that. You know what it is? It's like I feel like she took a lot of inspiration from like Bret Easton Ellis here, who I'm a huge fan of. Mm-hmm. Generally, I really enjoy stories about how rotten rich people are inside to their core. Just empty and soulless and disgusting. And to see this story where the twists go, it's like there's great class rage just flowing through this that I really enjoy.
I don't think they even had TVs.
The performances, no, they did. That's another level of rich, but they did.
Super bad.
The performances are incredible. Like Jacob Elordi is amazing. Keegan, whatever we call this guy.
Barry is his name.
Barry Keoghan.
He steals the show.
All the letters.
He steals the show in a lot of ways. He is so intense.
He's the main character. You can't steal the show as the main character.
That's not true. You cannot be the main character and steal the show. What the fuck are you talking about, John?
He is the main character.
Fuck
like,
out of here.
They cast him to be crazy. Like that's what he's there for.
What? Yeah. Okay, back off, John. All right. It's been a long fucking week, all right? It's very good. And there is like this crazy tension that runs through the whole thing, and it's partially about just watching all these people play this game with each other. It's partially about not entirely knowing people's motives. It's like a sexual tension that kind of underpins everything, and what's interesting is at moments it's very explicit, but like in the kind of most important relationship that has sexual tension between him, Felix, and Oliver.
Yeah.
Nothing even happens. But like, it's undeniable what is between them. And so, you know, regardless of the fact that it means different things to each of them, I think. But like, Caitlin, I think you mentioned it's just kind of like a story about obsession.
I mean, like, and with all the class stuff, it's there. And, you know, we have this sort of thread of Oliver cosplaying as poorer than he is, both to ingratiate himself into the family and also, as he says in dialogue to Felix, like, I'm playing the role you needed me to play. You know,
yeah, so it's also visually really stunning. And it does a thing that I think is really cool where, like I said, it reminded me of like a Bret Easton Ellis thing, but it also is like evocative of period pieces because of the places that it's set at. But there's also several really key scenes that are entirely lit by candlelight. And so there were like weird visual moments that almost reminded me of like Marie Antoinette or like Barry Lyndon or something. Like just visually the way they set up these kind of like tableaus with the candlelight. And that's just a really interesting thing. It's like to kind of what you're talking about, John. It's like the money is so old. They're almost just like living out of time in these places because nothing really in the outside world impacts them at all.
But I think one of my favorite pieces as
muted,
it relates
John,
to the,
which is all right, because I'm also
to the money old, is that like at the, you know, we have Barry Keoghan, we have Oliver giving his monologue about like, you know, you were like sleeping dogs lying belly up, didn't think anything could ever happen, but some of us have to work. And while I do appreciate like a fuck the rich type of vibe, my thing is like, I think that that's Oliver lying to himself because you don't watch your best beau jerk off in a tub and then slurp the bath water if you're not obsessed in like a, you know, like he can tell himself that it's just motivated by,
well, he is obsessed with wanting to be them. Mm-hmm. And they sort of call him out on it at several points. But we, I guess if we're going to talk about the whole picture, then we should just talk about where it goes. Cause that stuff doesn't happen until over an hour in. Well, maybe longer, like hour and a half really until we kind of know what is. The key turning scene of understanding the film is when Felix discovers that Oliver's lying about his family and takes him to the house. That's where you realize that he's like a pathological liar. You kind of get there's something up with him because once he gets in there, he starts acting like, you see him
with the sister
showing himself a little bit. Yeah. But basically what we find out is that he was obsessed with these people, wormed their way into the family, and has essentially started like at some point really deep into the film, starts killing them off one by one. That's mostly in the back end. But it's a hard twist because in the beginning of the film, he sort of presents as this character who's poor and down on his luck and was abused as a kid, whatever. So what we learn is that was kind of part of this story that he spins to essentially manipulate these people who really kind of treat him like a toy, which is a thing they say explicitly in the film.
Yeah. There's two like key scenes in this movie that really kind of blew my gourd that I loved. And the first one was the one that we mentioned when Jacob Elordi takes Oliver back to his house, kind of calls him out and stuff. And that whole scene with Barry and his parents, or Oliver and his parents, is just, I think that was one of the best scenes of the movie. Watching him break down and just watching his reactions to that, it even gave me anxiety watching him freaking out, knowing that everything is potentially falling apart. And it was just filmed so it was super uncomfortable. The other one that tipped me off is, and it was just a one-liner, but it was a scene with Oliver and the mom whose name I just blanked on.
Elspeth.
Yes, Elspeth. It was just Oliver and Elspeth out there on like the
veranda field,
on the veranda, and he just turns around out of nowhere, and it was like the first time he hit on her. He said something pretty dirty.
Well,
she's
like, oh, Pamela is so ugh, and he's like, yeah, if you believe everything she says, and then he's like, it must have been hard for Venetia having you as a mother. You're so fucking beautiful, and I was like, bro.
Yeah, I know. It's like that. It was that line, you're like, oh shit.
But even before that, like that scene is so good because like, you know, what the film is so good at is showing their really intense kind of narcissistic praise they give people to just kind of build them up a little bit. When they first, you know, it, like you can see when he walks in that room and they're all watching television, right? It is literally like he's the new toy and there's fully two other people living. There's like the cousin kid and the one you guys were mentioning earlier. Like these other people Carrie essentially Mulligan. Live there. Yeah, Carrie Mulligan. And it's like they're not even in the room. And you see that they're both are kind of like looks of resentment. And then this kid is suddenly like the belle of the ball. He's just like the new thing to play with. And like, so in that scene, it's really interesting where I really enjoyed when he turns those power dynamics around and manages to manipulate them. And you see like how desperate, because another thread in the film is that they're basically, they're so just like broken inside. They're incapable of sitting with any real thoughts or emotions. And so
she,
like,
Elspeth says that she is, I never wanted to know anything.
Right. And so she feels a kind of guilt. Somewhere deep down, she feels a kind of guilt about kicking her out, but is so allergic to even like feeling it that what he does, and it's almost like this knowing dance they do together. He like chimes in with another opinion and gives her permission to write her off and just talk shit about her. And she is so fucking eager. You hear it, like Rosamund Pike's performance. She's another one that's just like every scene she's in. She's so eager for someone to tell her that it's okay to just hate this person. That like, and then she starts playing the game. You hear her kind of perk up. She's like, yeah, you're right. Like she really was blah, blah, blah. And it's all, there are so many layers of like acting and manipulation going on in that scene. It's really a great microcosm of the whole thing.
I think two of the things that I love most about this, I love that we're getting a story that is, when you get a story where there's this like homoeroticism where it's like obsessed with, he's upset. And like, even in the beginning when he's narrating, he's like, people think I was in love with Felix. And maybe I was a little in love with Felix. That kind of storytelling, I feel like often happens when it's written about women characters. Like you think back to Jennifer's Body and a lot of those. I feel like these are tropes that are often applied to women's stories, but in this case, they're applied to men. And I feel like that's a really neat sort of subversion. And I think that's one of the reasons a lot of women in particular are so compelled by this story, because it's familiar, but it's put on these, you know, little like beautiful freak boys. It's just, you know, I love watching that unfold. I also love the idea that Oliver is kind of this vampire. He has the line about, you know, lucky for you, I'm a vampire, and he goes down on her. But I also like that, like, he has to be invited into this space. And once he's there, he sucks them dry, like top to bottom. There's this beautiful shot of them at Oxford. It's like when it's really hot, and Felix is like laid out on the carpet. He's got his shirt off because it's really hot. And then there's this shadow of Oliver in the window, but it's him inverted. It almost looks like he's hanging upside down like a vampire, like a bat, like Dracula. It's just like this beautifully
I hadn't thought of that, but that's shot. Kind of interesting.
Yeah, he's like this kind of parasite. And, you know, that's laid out later in the film, too. But I also, you know, you ever meet people that are like, I can't watch The Office because it's too cringy. I feel like if you're that kind of person, you might also cringy. Struggle with Saltburn.
Yeah. For some reason, because I do sometimes struggle with that, but I didn't. I just kind of enjoyed it here for some reason. Because I think like, I just hated everyone. So I was like, good.
Well, it's a different, I mean, The Office is like a different level of socioeconomic, you know, cringe.
Yeah, but like when, so like we have the scene where it's exposed that like his dad's alive and it's like a middle class house. He has siblings. Like everything he said was a lie. And that's cringe in and of itself. And Jacob, like the Felix character is decent enough where he's not going to blow it up and like fuck up this family's day. But then they like 90 miles per hour in the Jeep down the road back to Saltburn. But I don't think any of that compares to at Oliver's birthday party where they're singing happy birthday to him and nobody knows his name. I was just like, oh my fucking God. It's just like, but it's so, I mean, but it's so good. And that's how Oliver is. Like he's, nobody knows him, but he knows everything about everyone else because he's a little psycho freak.
There's so many great montages too that show this really interesting progression of how he kind of becomes ingrained in life there, and not just ingrained, but then you see him loosening up, and like those moments were almost like a little like Marie Antoinette or something to me. I don't know if I had mentioned that earlier.
Was it his birthday party? I don't think it was his birthday party, but there was one point like in the middle of the movie where he went like way overboard at one of their parties, where us normies watching it, he got so drunk and out of hand that it's like, oh no, this is going to ruin it all for him. But then by the next day, they're all just kind of like, yeah, whatever, and keep going.
Well, that's how they are. Like when, right. you know, they're like, wait, Pamela died? And they're like, don't mention it. And he's like, well, what if your parents mention it? They're like, they won't. You know, and it's like, and even the next day, like after they find Felix, they just go fucking sit down and have lunch as the coroner is walking by and they draw the drapes and it's like they're shrouded in red because the sun's coming through the drapes and they're like, I thought the cake was good. Sometimes chocolate scene, cake is cloying.
That scene was psychotic. It made me think of Hereditary, which is a film with so much cringe that I can barely handle it.
Yeah.
But it made me think of like those dinner scenes in Hereditary.
Well, those dinner, I mean, that's a different type of cringe for sure. But yeah.
I mean,
no,
I mean,
but it's a bunch of people sitting around a table who are all passive aggressive and can't talk about their emotions.
Like for me, though, this so you guys are kind of like, I agree. Like everything you're saying, I agree. Like I loved all the scenes. Some of it is like structurally how the film unfolds. It takes a little while to get into like how crazy, like, and all the like real crazy stuff with the family really only comes in the second half. And so, like, all the stuff, they're at Oxford for a while. Like, like fully 30 or 45 minutes of the movie. I mean, maybe it's an hour.
It's almost an hour. Yeah.
Like, the fact that they take that long to get to Saltburn, I think, is one of my problems. Like, because once they're there, it's great. And, like, the dynamics, all of the interesting things in this movie are about what's going on between the family members. There is this stuff at Oxford. I'm not saying it's bad, but it almost feels like a different movie. I mean, the character of the like nerdy friend is like an interesting character, but it doesn't come to a ton in the like overall, you know, whatever, you know, the end result of the film. Same with there's like a really brutal scene where there's the girl who's like hooking up with Jacob Elordi and then like
Do you think this will make him jealous?
Oh yeah. My God.
And he's like, I don't even think he's thinking about us. It's like, oh.
It's so bad. It's so bad. And all that stuff, again, like in the moment, that stuff is fine. Like it works and like it's well shot. Like it is gorgeously shot. And like Barry and Jacob and all, they're great. But I wanted, like, it felt a little confused, isn't the right word. It just takes a long time to get where it wants to go. And I feel like there's a version where it's a little more focused. I also think, look, and this is, I mentioned this like New York Times, like the point of the movie, it's not really about class rage. Like it, because.
No, it's just, I made it about that. John,
sure. No. Well, like that is, there's like a, there, that's like a certain, like.
There's a catharsis in watching it. If you're coming from a certain point of view.
Sure.
Is what I would say.
But. And I think Emerald Fennell is like playing with that like she's like teasing you a little bit because Barry Keoghan, Oliver, is not he's not a class actor. Like he's not someone there to like exact class rage. He has a different type of obsession or just straight sociopathy perhaps. But so it's not like a clean, oh, we're finally like eating the rich, you know, like that's not really what's happening.
And I like
here.
That though. Like,
no, totally.
I feel like the time you spend at Oxford, because I like Oliver. I mean, I know everything he does is horrific, but I like Oliver in the beginning.
He seems like a good hang.
Well, we'll get to that. but he's such a, I don't know, like I'm endeared to him because he does that like weird thing that friends do. And that comes back to what I was saying about that sort of like, do I want to be him? Do I want to be with him? This sort of like homo romantic friendship thing. When he sees that Felix is in the bar with the people and that he wasn't invited and he walks back and he walks back and he walks back and he walks back. And he's like, do I confront him? Do I not? Like you get some of that brooding. And I think all of that's really important in establishing my buy-in to Oliver as a character. And then when the tides turn and you realize, like when you get the shot that he let the air out of that bike tire, I was like, damn, I don't like him, but I am impressed. Like, God,
the stuff. I mean that like, look, the stuff at Oxford is there to establish him as like a real person, because if it's just the stuff that happens at Saltburn, it gets so cartoonish at a certain point. that you're just like, this guy's fucking crazy. But at Oxford, you see him, and the first shot of the film is him like arriving in his most authentic Oliver getup, you know, and we get to experience his transition to a certain, I mean, at some level, he was always like this. Like, it wasn't, he didn't just like decide to be.
Well, he's like, oh, I don't smoke. And then like you see him start to smoke and he starts to dress like Felix and he starts to X, Y, and Z like Felix. Mm-hmm. And like all those little moments, they do take a while, but I just really enjoy it.
Yeah. No, well, yeah. Sure.
I'll tell you what, that aspect, that journey of him that we take with him, though, going from meeting him in Oxford, like you said, and then watching his growth to the cartoonish side of it at the very end is really what parallels this to Talented Mr. Ripley for me. It's a similar journey that we're going on with this character.
Yeah. I mean, Ripley is a, like, from what I remember, I've read the book too. Like, he's like a more out and out anti-hero from the beginning. Like, he's like coded that way. He's sort of always, to a certain extent, evil. It's not 100%, like, the difference here is like, it's not clear that he's even doing anything wrong until like pretty deep in. But you know, where he ends up is very similar. Look, it's informed by Talented Mr. Ripley, you know, like at some level structurally.
So, well, I never saw John, so to me it doesn't exist.
Okay.
So. There you go. Well, like people kept, Mary and I covered this together on Plug It Up, and people kept saying like, oh, this is just a ripoff of Talented Mr. Ripley. And Mary was like, well, fine, I'm going to watch it before we record on Plug It Up. And so if you want to hear Mary's takedown of how these are different and how...
They are different, like, movies.
They are different. I feel like this one is more about obsession than it is about status. I feel like...
Yeah.
You don't go fuck the grave in...
Well...
Like, I just... Which, again, I have to say, improvised, not entirely, but he asked for a closed set that day because the script just kind of has him putting his hand in the dirt, but he asked for a closed set.
He and committed Emma Fennell to was that like, scene.
Baby, you do what you want to do, and he got his dick out and fucked that grave. Mary Shelley walked... so that to me, Oliver could run.
That is... that scene... I love that scene. It's like ridiculous that it exists.
How could you not?
At any level. But I do feel like it's confusing in the overall, like, when you step back.
But why?
If where he is going, which we know at the end is like, I mean, just full spoiler, like he is eliminating the family and he is inheriting Saltburn. Like, that's sort of the ultimate game plan. Like, that sequence happens 30 or 40 minutes before the end of the movie. So, like, what are we to believe about his obsession with Jake? Like, was that just his, like, the end of his relationship with Jacob Elordi, with Felix? Like, I gotta bang the grave site and then, like, I can move
on? Part of it for me is he's doing these things that are, some people would consider degrading, to sort of ingratiate himself into this and feel like he's earned it. Like I said, I think he's lying
that
to himself.
For anyone. He's no, doing it just
but that's
for
what
him.
That's what I mean. I don't think that, John, I think he's
can
lying
I just
to
have
himself.
Sex with dirt? Why do you need an explanation?
I think he's lying to himself about this
I can
being a
celebrate
class
it,
thing.
For sure.
He's using that
do
as
need,
an excuse.
Do you need to learn about the birds and the
you
bees?
You don't tonight, slurp John. The bathwater and you don't fuck the grave unless you are obsessed.
Yeah.
So right. Like when he jerks off Farley in the bed, when he goes down on Venetia when she's on her period, when he does all these things that are somewhat considered degrading or somewhat considered whatever, he's ingratiating himself in a way that is like next level, not just to them, but to him. And even though Felix is gone at that point, that's just what solidifies it to me that this isn't just about, I mean, he can say in his monologue to like intubated Elspeth at the end, like, you rich people, blah, blah, blah. But it's like, buddy, this was for you.
Yeah.
And I like that. I like movies about obsession. And he, like, this is one of the best, I think. Mm.
But do you think he's obsessed with the family more so than, like, Jacob Elordi's character specifically?
I think
his obsession with him
but,
is the most intense.
Yeah.
And then, you know, but by that point, you know? And then after Venetia goes, and the dad, who is like my favorite character, because he just wants to wear his suit of armor. He's incredible.
I love the dad.
He's so oblivious.
Like, he's like, hey, you gotta get the fuck out of here. He's the only one that's
neither,
not pleased.
That's what it is. Neither is Rosamund Pike. Neither of them are oblivious. It's that they are not capable of being present, and like you see it in his face when he's trying to pay him off to leave and he says he won't leave. There is like a kaleidoscope of acting emotions happening on the dad's face, because he is in that moment realizing how psycho this dude is and won't call him out on it.
I love that.
When they're at the dinner table, same thing. Like, again, it's like there's this thin layer of they're trying to keep it to keep the images together for who exactly, like, you know what I mean?
But Richard Grant, by the way, phenomenal actor, over 145 credits to his name, but I still think his best character is Hudson Hawk.
It's a deep cut.
As the Mayweather.
Deep cut.
I love him in this movie. I think he, like, that's one of, I think he gives one of the most emotive performances too. Like when Felix is missing that morning and they're trying to find him, and like Farley and Venetia are like dragging the pond, thinking that maybe he like drowned in the pond or something. And then you hear Rosamund Pike scream, which is also not dissimilar from Hereditary when, you know, Annie finds Charlie's body.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he's like, we just got to get him inside. Where's his jumper? And it's just like, oh God. Like,
that seems,
I don't have a lot of genuine like tenderness when I watch this movie. I have a lot of fascination and like, you know, shock, but that really did, like,
even before they find him, the, again, like, there's just these really creative visual things in this film, like where he wakes up after the party and it's almost like, I can't remember if it was slow motion, but it's like there's just people running around everywhere. The house is trashed and the camera's kind of tracking behind him. It's just such an effective moment, that scene. And because people are kind of, it's like, you're trying to figure out what happened. You kind of figure it out at some point, but it's just like you're walking through the chaos with him. Well, he does. Okay, he does know.
Yeah,
but we don't know.
But it's, he's putting on a good performance. And then like,
what do we make of the mirror being replaced?
I love that moment. So if it's been a while,
yes,
he punches the mirror. So this is after Farley makes him sing that sort of degrading song at karaoke where it's like, you pay my rent or whatever. He goes and he punches the mirror and it shatters. And then the next morning, it's like put together because the staff at Saltburn are like, with everything else, it's like, we're not going to have a blemish. We're going to fix this and cover this up. He even like runs his thumb along the seam and like the wood is all flush. I was like,
Well, I took it too, though. As I took it also as showing how the family in Saltburn as a whole is indifferent to that kind of reaction. Like, this is not the first time somebody's gotten pissed off and punched a mirror. It's, you know, routine, par for the course. Well,
like, it's supernaturally healed itself.
Well, hold on. The other potential spin on that, Casey, would be like, because this is like the level of wealth that we're seeing. I mean, I mentioned like this is like generational, right? Like, these people, I mean, there's like a level of objectionableness. Eric, you were referencing like how distasteful or upset like this level of wealth makes you feel. But like, they didn't do anything to get this money. Like, they were born into this. Yeah. The thing that sequence shows is how, like, the mirror thing is how like pampered their lives are. Like, they don't even they don't even register a broken mirror because they don't even see it. Like, the mirror gets broken.
Nobody,
maybe they knew it was broken, but it is replaced not by the people. It's not, it's not fucking the dad who's replacing it.
It's the staff.
Yeah.
And so like, they live in this universe that's like, not, they didn't create it. They didn't even earn it other than through their birth. And like, it,
yeah, it, that's what I meant. That's par for the course for the staff. They've dealt with this shit before.
There is like a really interesting,
broken mirror is nothing. Yeah.
There is kind of just a really interesting like metaphorical thing though. Of like, it's like he tries to blemish it and it's perfect again in the morning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They don't look at anything ugly. I mean, that's canonically Elspeth, you know, she's like, I just can't stand ugliness in any form. And like, you see Felix take out the eyebrow piercing when he's at home because she's like, so... Yeah. And he's like, yeah, because you're like a bad person.
Well, that's what's funny. Like, so as I'm saying, like, the, because when you watch the movie, I don't think,
at least my experience of the parents was not like, I hate them. Like, you feel sorry for them. Like, you almost pity them. The dad, I agree with Caitlin, is kind of incredible and has like a, there's like a pridefulness to him. There's like a, like an honor that he just like wants to live by. He like lives in a different universe than the rest of the world, potentially. Rosamund Pike's character, Elspeth, like, she's objectionable at certain way. Like, that whole bit about, I don't like anything that's ugly. And even when the friend dies, and she's like,
Pamela would do anything for attention.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's just like suicide, and it's like, it's okay. Like,
it's so brutal.
Mm. Can I say, though, my favorite Elspeth line? She was like, I was a lesbian for a little while. It was all too wet in the end for me. Men are so lovely and dry.
Oh my God, that line was so good.
Oh God, she's so good.
She's wonderful.
Rosamund Pike is just, and at the end when she's, I just think everything about her presence is so funny. Like, even in the end when he, when Oliver rips the intubated like tube out of her throat, which goes so deep, like it's a violent act, and she dies. He like lays his head on her chest, which is like symbolic of like, buddy, this is again for you. Like, I don't know who you think this is for, but this is just for you. Her arm flops down because she's fucking dead, and he puts it back up on her butt, on her like corpse, to like cradle him. I'm just like, oh my God.
Yeah.
And then we get the naked dance at the end.
Hey, did you, I read that the Minotaur in the middle of the maze is, the maze doesn't exist. Saltburn, the estate, does exist, not under that name, but the maze is, you know, generated, and
it's a great statue, yeah.
The statue is based on Barry Keoghan's physique, and apparently when Emerald Fennel needed Barry Keoghan to, like, switch into Creepo mode, she would shout Minotaur at him so that he would, like, flip into Creepozoid mode, which
there's
I
some really great, yeah, there's some really great physical acting, just the way he kind of creeps around.
Speaking of Barry Keoghan's physique, kudos to him for that final dance sequence in this movie. I mean, he went for it. It was not shy, and I applauded him.
He does a rail of coke and then just fucks off, dances around the mansion. Perfect song choice. All around song choices in this. And
butt ass naked.
Yeah.
And he just, yeah. God bless him.
All right. This is a 2023 one, right, John?
Yes, correct.
Yeah.
If you had allowed it, this would have been pretty high up on my list, I think.
Same.
It's not that
it's a little
hard.
It's pretty borderline.
It's not that hard.
He is a serial killer.
Yeah. All right. Look, it's very borderline.
Yeah, but I got to, I mean, to that point, though, I kind of got the impression that he got what he wanted at the end, and I don't know that he'd necessarily go kill him. Granted, he's going to be a rich monster, so maybe he would kill people, but I don't know that that was his intention. He got what he wanted.
Well, it's a moot point anyway, because it's 2024 now. Would you recommend this movie, Caitlin?
Oh, a million times over. I love this.
Yes, I'd recommend it.
John?
I have recommended it, and I've also steered people away from it. So that's a sort of...
I'm a big thumbs up. Plus one for me. All right. Nice. Let's take a quick break. We got a lot of weird questions tonight. Yeah. So let's take a quick break and do some fan mail.
Where do they come from? Why are they here? Why clowns? You'll laugh your head off. From outer space. It's crazy. Rated PG-13.
Starts Friday, May 20th at a theater near you.
Hi, this is Mark Corvin. I'm the music composer for The Witch, and you're listening to Bloody Good Horror.
info@bloodygoodhorror.com or on Twitter using #AskPGH. Join Patreon to get back episodes and much more. patreon.com/bloodygoodhorror.
Lots of questions signed about bathwater and wieners, John.
Classic.
Get excited. Casey.
Yes.
You went to Salem.
I did. I wasn't here on the show last week because I was spending a good 5 days with my lovely wife, Colleen, in Salem, Mass. And we had a blast. The drive we drove, which was not the funnest part, but it was all right. But yeah, we stayed right in the heart of Salem at the Hotel Salem. And so we were right smack dab in the middle of all of the things to see in Salem. And it was pretty fantastic. It was all within walking distance. We got to see the Salem Witch Museum. And
did you see the Witch House? Hocus
House. Oh, yeah. Saw nice. The Witch House and all sorts of good stuff. Unfortunately, it was we're pretty early in the season. So some of the big draws for me were not open, like Count Orlok's museum, wax
that
museum.
That place is amazing, yeah.
Which was a bummer to see that it was closed for the season because it was literally right next door to the hotel. But at the same time...
Oh, okay, yeah, you were downtown then.
Yeah, we found so much cool stuff, though, that was open. I found My Little Frankenstein Monster-Loving Heart was in 7th Heaven. And Colleen, whose big draw was all the witchiness and whatnot, was there plentiful as well.
I mean, there's just witch stores. It's like, hey, here's some witchy stuff. Yeah, Colleen wants some in fucking heaven.
Oh, and there's like goth fashion stores like that are like a whole experience. You go in and they'll take you through to show you their fashions and wares and whatnot. So imagine them seeing Colleen and I walk in and we're like, hi, we just came to look. And they're like, okay. But no, everybody was nice. And it's a great little town. Everybody is super friendly. The sidewalks, it does feel like the sidewalks roll up by like 7 p.m. in that town.
I'm sure.
It's a small town.
Yeah. My favorite part, honestly, was just hearing you react to driving in Boston for the first time. Like,
oh, yeah. We spent the weekend after we went to... the burbs of Boston. So I wasn't in downtown Boston, but the Boston drivers are a different experience than Hoosier
even
drivers.
Being from New York, when I moved there, it was like mystifying to me and used to make me so angry until I just finally started accepting it and putting it together that like everyone thinks they have the right of way, no matter what position in traffic they're in. Like everywhere else, there's like agreed upon rules of the road. Not there. Like if someone is turning left, they, in their minds, I'm not saying that they do have the right of way because I refuse to give that ground, John. But what I'm saying is that person turning left thinks they have the right of way. And so you have to make your decision based on that knowledge that they think they have the right of way. Once you can start to like focus on that, you'll be fine.
My framing of it is a little different.
You also, I should say, have to start driving.
I live in New York City. Like, whatever you think that level of aggressive driving is, New York City is like, turn it up, you know, a couple notches.
And I've only driven in down there once, but it's like, it is aggressive driving, but it's more, again, it's aggressive driving, but it's also more just like a complete misunderstanding of the rules. That's the part that bothers me.
Well, John, I lived in South America where there are no rules.
I know. Well, I was going to say, I actually just don't think Eric knows the rules necessarily. My sense.
I know the rules. To be fair, I don't.
I texted Eric, though, because Eric had lived in that area as well. And I texted him, you know, like, holy crap, the drivers are nuts out here. And he said exactly what he just told you all. And I'm like, yes, I saw that like 4 times. I saw at least twice dudes sitting at the stop at a stoplight or at a green light until it turns red. And then they gun it and go through the intersection.
Yeah, I'll tell you,
they tailgate like mofos.
I'll tell you the moment that I finally, like, my brain broke. And I just had to start giving in. We were going out to lunch with some guys that I worked with, and this one dude like was just a lot. He's just a pain in the ass, but he's driving. We go to lunch, we come back. I watch him cut someone off turning left in traffic, like fully not what you're supposed to do. And I'm like, I need to know that you understand that was not what you did not have the right of way there. I need to know you understood that. And he literally just looked over at me and was like, get out of my car. It's like,
Someone pulled out in front of me on my way back home to record this. Someone pulled out in front of me and like almost hit me. And I was like, fucking idiot. But then when he pulled in front of me, 1,000% serious, his license plate, S-A-F-E-M-A-N, safe man. And I was like, No, sir.
Love it.
Anyway,
on the Saturday, I went to a mall in Peabody so I could get my hat because I was by hat when I go on a
trip. Casey, it's, you know how they pronounce it there, right?
No.
It's Peabody.
Ah. I knew
Moose. It does not make sense.
I just went with Peabody. But I went over there and that was like all the other places I had driven in the, like, because we were in Wakefield and that area wasn't too crazy, but I saw the crazy driving right away, but everybody was like pretty chill about it. I went to Peabody to that mall and I came out and all you could hear was people honking and yelling at each other out of windows. I'm like, Jesus Christ, man.
I love it. Our little Midwestern boy visited the East Coast.
Good times.
All right. info@bloodygoodhorror.com. Caitlin from Kissimmee says Ghost Watch is now on Shudder. Congrats on the coming renaissance, Eric.
That's huge. I thought like our understanding was that was like,
I feel like it's been on Prime for years.
That's right. Interesting.
Okay. Yeah. Around the time that we did it was when it finally came back and started being, must have been some release.
Well, I assumed that the rights were like too complicated and it wasn't going to get a release or something, but
you can watch that movie several ways, John.
Interesting. Okay. I don't follow the Ghost Watch news like some people.
I do. Next up from
not
Tommy.
A real fan.
Ooh.
I just want to point out that the voice actor, Lorenzo Music, for all the old Garfield cartoons that was mentioned in the Cat Person episode, also did the voice for Dr. Peter Venkman in The Real Ghostbusters.
Hmm. Yeah, nice.
So maybe it does make sense that Bill Murray would be cast for the Garfield voice.
Has Caitlin seen Cat Person?
No.
It's so good.
Sorry.
No, I mean, it's like put it on your list potentially, you know. It just completely disappeared into the ether, but it's maybe worth a watch.
Casey, what do we got on threads?
Yeah, we got a couple threads out there.
Katie knows how to get on the, get the comment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to give everybody a fair warning because it's going to carry on into Instagram. The questions are going to get weird.
Listen, people like understand. We will entertain that one question about drinking bathwater, and then we can't read everyone's.
You guys make 50. Me feel like a degenerate because I'm like, drink my bathwater, like, be obsessed with me, or don't waste my time.
Wait, if it's about like, do you want someone? Let's go to the questions.
I know, but like, how do you never want
the question?
Go to questions. No, but
like,
go to questions.
When people say like, "Oh, it's so weird," I'm like, have you never wanted to kiss your homies? Like, I don't know. Anyway.
All right, our good buddy Skylar from popcorn.designs. If you could bang anyone's fresh grave mound, whose would it be?
Just going right into the deep
end. Yep.
I love
Skylar. Diving in.
Oh my God.
So that's why I said Mary Shelley walked so that, because Mary Shelley famously fucked on her mother's grave, not fucked her mother's grave, but fucked on her mother's grave.
Oh my God.
And kept her husband's heart
I don't want to be that person, John, but if you really wanted to method act, he should have been erect before he had sex with the ground. I'm just saying, like,
they got to draw the line somewhere unless they want to.
Really? You saw the rest of that scene? That's where the line is?
Okay. He's under a lot of stress.
I think for me, it would be about what is the shape of the headstone. I think
they needed
an
intimacy coordinator to kind of
make this work.
A good Virgin Mary. Like,
you know, it's going to have to be in the moment. It's going to be a decision I make, I think. So
I don't really have the anatomy to do this, so
Galen, whoa, why are we, come on now. you can get after it any way you want.
We're all creative people here. You could figure it out.
You could have made it about the gravestone, but you didn't.
Next up, the drummer from Foghat. This is a two-parter here, so I'll ask the question and there's a PS. First, can Barry Keoghan play anything other than a sociopathic weirdo? Granted, I've only seen this in Killing of a Sacred Deer, so my sample set
only... Is that where I've seen this, dude? Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. That tracks.
So my sample set only allows for sociopathic weirdos that he's played.
He's a creepy little weirdo. He does it pretty good.
He's a little freak. And he slurps spaghetti in Killing of Sacred Deer, so he is a slurpy
boy. I mean, I think we've mentioned on the show, he's playing the Joker in the next Batman.
Is he?
If you saw the Batman, the one with what the hell's his name? Pattinson. There's like a credit scene, or like the very end of the movie, they have the Riddler go to prison, and he's like in prison next to the Joker, and it's Barry Keoghan.
I'm kind of excited for it, to be honest.
Banshees of Inisherin. Maybe we've talked about this on the show. He's, you know, he's like a secondary character. He's like a supporting actor in that film, and it's a very different character. If you want a non-crazy version of Barry. He's going to be fine. Don't worry about Barry. He's doing great.
He's the white boy of the moon. Step aside, guy from the bear.
Let's keep going, Casey. We got a lot of horny questions.
The PS for the drummer from Foghat. PS, Caitlin, this is your old pal, Alex Jones, or Senator Chuck Grassley from Twitter.
Oh, my God. He was like my favorite part of Twitter. I love him. He outed
himself, finally.
He was like my favorite part of Twitter. And when he was leaving, I was like, oh. You're the funniest person here.
All right. A metal prof jumped in to ask. He said he decided to watch Saltburn today instead of going to Dune. Did he make the right choice? And he came back and realized he did not make the right choice for him.
I saw Dune on Tuesday and
good.
Pretty fun. Pretty good.
Yeah.
It's a long one.
You know, it was shorter than I thought. Like when it ended, I was like, oh, thought it was going to be longer. So,
all right. Next up, Ryan Tehan, whose bathwater would you drink?
I'm all for some weird, funky stuff there, John. The drinking the bathwater thing, like that.
Yeah,
might be.
It might be a bridge too far for me too.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, here's the thing:
there's no real sex act involved. Like, he just
That's the point. It's about the yearning.
There's soap in that water. Like, how much? Like, you know.
Yeah, at the same time, I think it was the influencer Pokimane or something like that who'd sold her bathwater a couple years ago. I thought it was ridiculous, but at the same time, if she can find people that are paying for it, more power to you. Gotta make that
I get it. I understand, Caitlin, the allure. I'm just saying, for me, you know, look, I've been married a long time.
Right. I mean, it wouldn't be my first thing I would do, but like...
yeah.
All right, the last one here. It's not a creepy question. It's actually a good question. It's from Dean Robertson 57. What's classy if you're rich, but trashy if you're poor?
Mm-hmm.
Having someone else raise your kids.
Yeah.
I think is
Wow, that's a good one. I was going to say there's like a shitload of things. It's like almost everything at some level.
Yeah, I think Caitlin kind of blew it out of the water there with that one. I mean, you've got, you know, your distracted parenting, lack of guidelines, lack of structure, everything.
Mm-hmm. But if you call it an au pair, then it's different.
Then it's fancy.
Yeah.
All right, that's it for threads. I almost slipped.
All right. We're on Instagram. This is just a shit show here, so let's get through it. Rory
Your
says, sexiest inanimate object.
Wait, what was the question?
Inanimate object?
Sexiest inanimate object.
Mm.
Schnorr's bathwater.
I mean, so I got a new recliner for my birthday a couple weeks ago. It's pretty sexy.
I'm in my heating pad era. Heating pad.
A million questions about bathwater. We got another one, a real one from Ashton. An actor, actress that is a little weirdo that you love. Mine is James Spader.
Oh, he's real weird. Yeah, that's great.
Mine's Elijah Wood.
Elijah Wood also. And that's, you know, I think that's, you just like him because he looks like you.
I think any of the Culkins, like Rory, Kieran, Culkin.
Oh my God.
All of them are little freaks.
Which one was in Succession?
That's Rory.
Rory.
I'm obsessed with him after that show. I thought that was Kieran. So good.
Wait.
Kieran is Succession. Rory is Scream 4.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay. They're different.
I love a Culkin. They're a little like little freaks, but
they're all little freaks, actually.
We talked about her like a couple weeks ago on the show, or maybe it's been months now, but Jenna Malone. Pretty weird.
Yeah.
She's great. Mm-hmm.
She's not little, though. She's tall.
Yeah, she's tall. I didn't know they had to be physically small. I thought it was...
Yeah, that's the point.
Okay. No Crispin Glover fans?
What do you mean? Oh, I love Crispin Glover.
I love Crispin. He's about as weirdo as you can get.
I showed... maybe I talked about this. I showed my kids Back to the Future for the first time. And they enjoyed it. Crispin Glover is fucking weird, man. That
is.
Like, it's great how fucking awkward he is in that movie. Like, it really works.
All right. We got the question of the night here, John. Mm. This is from Michael. You might remember Michael because he won our costume contest in 2020 from our virtual quarantine Halloween party.
Oh, right, he was...
I don't remember because I was too drunk, but continue.
And he drops by to throw this bomb into the chat. Was Barry Keoghan's hog bigger than you expected?
I didn't have an expectation, I guess.
Yeah, I didn't have any expectations.
First of all, I just want to say, I think this is short guy slander.
Pretty good. No, he's doing great.
I've heard a lot about that scene. And if I had just watched the movie, I never would have expected people to be talking. Like, it looked pretty normal to me, John. I don't know. Like, it wasn't boogie nuts.
Okay, Eric.
I'm just saying.
I mean, I'm happy for him. It was, I think the last time that I was like shocked was Kid Cudi in X.
Yeah.
I just think that's what I'm saying. Like, Barry is a shower, not a grower, and that's okay.
Sure. Okay.
God.
It's...
My mom listens to every podcast I do. This is going to be great.
Didn't strike me as out of the ordinary, John. That's all I'm saying.
It was fine. It was very good. I, you know, thumbs up.
Thumbs up from John.
Yeah.
There you go. Let's see. I'm looking for the actual real questions. What other Shakespeare's play would you theme a birthday party after? This presumes that I know any Shakespeare.
Macbeth.
Yeah, all I can think is Macbeth and Hamlet and Romeo and Juliet, and I don't know those would be any of those would be good. I mean, for birthday
none
parties.
Of them are as cool and like inspirational in terms of costuming as Midsummer Night's Dream. But.
Yeah, well, you don't really want to do one of the tragedies like those.
Maybe you
are grim. There's one we read in high school called Comedy of Errors that is delightful and would be a lot of fun. But yeah, I mean, The Tempest. Tempest has got all kinds of weird ass characters going on. But Midsummer Night's Dream that's the one. That's the one you want to do.
Thank you, John. I'm not cultured enough for this question. I know you answer it. All right.
I think he would have worn the suit of armor no matter what party.
I love
two that. More tonight. Best song to dance around in the mansion nude.
I think
this is extremely simple and it's Party in the USA.
Oh, that's a good. I was going to say Dancing on My Own by Robin.
Oh, that's a good choice. Too.
That's just like one of my faves. So,
yeah.
I'd go Uptown Funk.
Okay.
I think Murder on the Dance Floor, they really nailed it, but Dancing on My Own is.
No, the scene is great. It's very good.
Yeah.
It's great. The song selection across the board.
Oh, you know what? There was a couple Slack questions. And one of them was Do you dance around in the house by yourself when you're alone?
Yeah, from Dot.
No.
And the answer is absolutely. It doesn't surprise me that you don't dance.
Well, Eric, the
are you ever whimsical in your life?
The question you should be asking yourself is, am I ever in my house alone?
Never mind.
And the answer is no.
I get it.
That's fair.
We do dance parties with the kids, and it's a lot of fun. No one, and Eric, I don't know, maybe you have experiences. There's no one who has like dance energy like a six-year-old girl. Like it is just like...
It's
a different universe. Yeah. It's amazing. So it's a great time.
And then you start dancing, and then you're like, I gotta sit down.
Yeah, yeah. You're like, I'm winded. You're gonna keep going like this. So
yeah. I honestly don't know if it's possible to do dishes without your AirPods and dancing.
Mm. I would break a lot of dishes. Our kitchen is small.
Natalie is the Slack person. Who didn't like this movie because she felt like it was Talented Mr. Ripley. She says, is Saltburn just a Tumblr fried Gen Z, the Talented Mr. Ripley?
No.
She's real salty about it.
I mean,
she did not like our comparison on the Plug It Up episode either.
I'm sensitive to that critique, but I think there's more to it.
Yeah. There's definitely a lot of shared DNA there, but it's not exact. It's not one-to-one.
There's grave humping, guys. Like, can we just, salute
on that. This is canonically not Gen Z because this takes place in 2006 and it is decidedly millennial with that.
Millennial, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a good question.
Yeah. That was Eric and I were graduating college, you know.
This one's from nearby. Dot.
Me too.
No, I was already working in 2006.
Well,
Eric, I was already out making bad life decisions in 2006. I mean, so. Dot, did you ever create a fake persona for yourself when you were younger? Around 19, I really thought I could pull off aloof and mysterious. I absolutely could not. Similar arc. Honestly, I've wanted to be nothing but aloof my whole life, and I'm anything but. Hmm. So,
I went real hard into the whole grunge thing and my senior year of high school. So, which, you know, carried over well in college doing, you know, my grunge hair, my grunge flannel and boots and carrying my tuba to band room.
Nothing more grunge than a tuba.
No, I have always been a Lilith Fair ass bitch. Like this outfit I have on, my friend Maddie was
that
like,
is why pretty do you 90s. Look
like a, she was like, you look like a goth trad wife. And I was like, wow, that's my brand. Call me a slur next time.
That is. That's good.
She nailed hilarious. It.
All right. Last question of the evening. Is coitus with the dirt of a grave considered necrophilia?
Nah.
I don't think so.
Just adjacent.
It's adjacent. I think that's right.
Yeah,
you're definitely thinking about the dead person when you're.
It's honestly closer though to people who like have sex with trees, don't you think?
Yeah, but you're thinking about the dead person. That's I think the difference. When you're fucking the tree, you're just like, this is cool. It's a tree. I guess.
I want to Google what it's called when you have sex with dirt, and then I just realize I'm on my work computer, so maybe I won't.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, but not a good idea.
I'll do that after the show, John. Yeah. I'll report back.
I mean, I always figured there's a hard line that there's got to be a corpse involved in the act. So,
right. Yeah.
You're nearby.
Okay. Do we know we're doing next week, below. John? I don't think so.
There's a film being released in theaters this weekend called Imaginary.
Mm-hmm.
This is the one with the imaginary friends that may or may not be like demons killing people or something. I don't know. It's a Blumhouse.
Is this our first? Yeah.
It's a Blumhouse. It's a Blumhouse joint.
Blumhouse,
is this our first Blumhouse of the year?
They're not inspiring me well, lately. They did Night Swim.
They did Night Swim, Eric's second favorite movie of the year. So, you know.
Okay, relax, John.
Caitlin, have you seen Night Swim yet?
I have heard so much about Night Swim and I haven't seen it yet.
All right. We'll wait and get your...
Caitlin, where can people find you when you are not here?
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at PlugItUpPod. And I also do a Twilight review podcast with my friends, Mary and Charlie. It's a very silly time. And you can find us at Skin of a Killer podcast in Skin and Killer and Plug It Up.
When are you going to have John on your Twilight podcast? That's what I want to know.
When are we going to have John? John, you look very Volturi. No, you're more of a Cullen than a Volturi.
How does a Twilight podcast work? Like are you like going chapter by chapter? Are you only doing the films?
We
do
like 6-chapter chunks. And then once we finish a book, we do the movie. We just finished the last movie. So we've moved through the content proper. And we're going to
I think it should be like that straight podcast from those. It should be like that podcast from those New Zealand comedians where they watched that Adam Sandler movie every week for a year or something. Grown Ups too. Yeah. Until they just literally lost their minds and went insane.
It's a lot of, Twilight's silly, but we have a lot of fun. So you can find me. Plug It Up Pod is where I exist, and then Skin of a Killer for me, Mary, and Charlie.
Love it. I wish I could remember the name of that podcast. It was actually like a brilliant art installation or something. Like, literally, there were episodes where they just got on and talked about how sad and depressed it made them that they had to watch the movie that week. It's brilliant.
I mean, it would do that to me. I wouldn't have made it.
I enjoy that movie.
I would have been faking like halfway through that I was still watching it.
They watched it together. They got together every week and sat together and watched it.
Oh, I think I would be okay with that, actually. If I was watching brilliant. I mean, were they drinking? I assume
it was like the worst podcast in the world or something like
that. I think that might have actually been the name of the pod. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. That's going to do it. Hope you enjoyed the show. Don't forget to check us out, patreon.com/bloodygoodhorror. And we'll talk to you next week.
See yous.
Bye.
Bye-bye.